We are here and we're going to talk today about the book of Daniel. Now, a couple of weeks ago, we talked about, I was going to say the book of Noah. There isn't a book of Noah, but the account of Noah. And we said how Jesus talking about the Old Testament meant that Noah was not a fictional story. Noah was not a parable. Noah was not an imagination. Noah existed. And if you don't believe that, then the rest of the Bible doesn't kind of stand together. And so today we're talking about Daniel, and it's very similar because we're going to link Jesus with the account of Daniel. When we get talking about current affairs, when we start talking about your opinion about, well, let's put on the list, Thomas. These are things that have been discussed in Parliament. Sorry that the words are a bit small. These have all been discussed in Parliament in the last 30 days. I'm not going to pick them all, but some of them you might recognise. Just Stop Oil has been discussed. Euthanasia, I forgot the lady's name, Esther Ranson, is bringing that to the fore at the minute. Death penalty, vaping limit, BBC licence fees. And you can scan across a whole load of them. Electric cars, the King's Speech, how on earth is that being debated? But if you look on the government website, this has been discussed, often at 10:30 at night with hardly anybody in the seats. But these things have had votes, and they've had bills, and they've had decisions made. Plastic usage, online gambling, trophy hunting, going to Tenerife, there's another one thing. But what I want to do this morning, just in our first part, is we're going to think about the book of Daniel, and we're going to watch a video. Because Daniel was known for, hopefully if you know the book of Daniel, the account of Daniel, he was known for a couple of things, and one of them was for being really true to his convictions. He was not afraid to say, I'm sorry, I can't go along with that. And that's not popular today, and I don't think it was popular back then. Have you got that slide from Billy Graham, Thomas, or have you got rid of it already? If you can show it, just before we watch the video. Because, next slide, that's it. Because Billy Graham, famous preacher for many years, as you know, said, the prophets who spoke to their generations for God did not please and conform, they irritated and opposed. And I guess we've got to come to a bit of a conclusion as we look at the account of Daniel this morning. Daniel refused to go along with the flow. When I was a teenager, many years ago, we used to have Christian t-shirts. And there was a very popular Christian t-shirt. I have a funny feeling that you may have had this one, which had lots of fish going in the one direction. And then it had a Christian, Becky, do you remember that design? And then there was one fish going the other way, and it was the ichthus fish, the Jesus-shaped fish, going the other direction. And actually, there are times where we need to stand our ground. And we need to feel, do you know what? I'm not going to be okay with what popular opinion might be, or what policy might be, or what the expected answer for a, you know, citizen of the UK might be. Because whether we like it or not, more and more pressure is coming on us to conform. The Bible, of course, says, do not conform to the pattern of this world. You know that. So there is a pattern. And I'm hoping that this is going to work. Go for it, Thomas. This is about the book of Daniel. Thank you.
The book of Daniel. The story is set right after Babylon's first attack on Jerusalem, and they had plundered the city and its temple and taken a wave of Israelites into exile. Among them were four men from the royal family of David, Daniel, who's later named Belteshazzar, and his three friends, who you probably know by their Babylonian names, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. This book tells of their struggles to maintain hope in the land of their conquerors. The book's design seems pretty simple at first. Chapters 1 through 6 contain stories about Daniel and his friends in Babylon, while chapters 7 through 12 contain the visions of Daniel about the future. But this two-part shape is made even more interesting by another design feature, and that's the book's language. It begins in Hebrew, the language of the Israelites, but chapters 2 through 7 are written in Aramaic, a cousin language to Hebrew spoken widely among the ancient empires. But then, in chapters 8 through 12, it goes back to Hebrew. This design shows how chapters 2 through 7 are a coherent section, but it also highlights the importance of chapters 2 and 7 for understanding the later chapters of the book. Let's just dive in. Chapter 1 introduces the basic tension of the first half of the book. Daniel and his friends, they're really wise and capable, and they're recruited to serve in the royal palace of Babylon. But they're pressured to give up their Jewish identity by living and eating like Babylonians and violating the Jewish food laws found in the Torah. So they refuse, and they choose faithfulness to the Torah, and that puts them in danger. But God delivers them, and they end up being elevated by the king of Babylon. After this begins the Aramaic section, which you'll see has this really cool symmetrical design. So first, the king of Babylon has a dream that, it turns out, only Daniel is able to interpret. It's about a huge statue made of four types of metal, and it symbolizes a sequence of kingdoms, and the head is Babylon. But then a huge rock comes flying in, and it shatters the statue, and it becomes this huge mountain. Now, this dream is the first of many symbolic visions in the book, and this one introduces the basic storyline of them all. Daniel says that the statue represents a train of human kingdoms following from Babylon, and they will all fill God's world with violence. But one day, God's kingdom will come and will confront and humble the arrogant kingdoms of this world and fill the world with the healing justice of God's reign and rule. After this, chapter 3 tells the famous story of Daniel's three friends who refuse to bow down and worship a huge idol statue, which, like the statue in chapter 2, represents the king and his imperial power. And so the friends are persecuted, they're thrown into a fiery furnace, but God delivers them from death, and they're exalted by the king, who now acknowledges their God as the true one. After this come a pair of stories about two Babylonian kings, the father, Nebuchadnezzar, and then his son, Belshazzar. They're both filled with pride because of their imperial power, and so, like in chapter 2, God warns them both through dreams and then visions, which, also like chapter 2, only Daniel can interpret. He says that both kings are to humble themselves before God, and both kings arrogantly resist. So Nebuchadnezzar is stricken with madness. He becomes like a beast in the field. But then he humbles himself before God, and his humanity returns to him. He's restored as king. This is in contrast with his son, Belshazzar, who doesn't humble himself before God, and he's assassinated that very night. Now, these two stories draw this imagery from Genesis chapters 1 and 2 and Psalm 8, where humans are depicted as the royal image of God. He's given them authority to rule over the beasts of the field and the birds of the air on behalf of God, who is the world's true king. But when human kingdoms forget that, when they rebel and make themselves and their power into a god, they become less than human, like violent beasts who will face God's justice. Which brings us to chapter 6, the pair of chapter 3. And this time it's Daniel who's being persecuted because he refuses to pray and worship the king as a god. And so, like the friends, he's sentenced to death and he's thrown into a lion's den. But God delivers him from the beasts, and like the friends, the king exalts Daniel and praises his God. Which brings us to chapter 7. It's the pair of chapter 2 and the center of the book where all its themes come together. It's another dream, but it's Daniel's this time. And ironically, he can't understand the dream until an angelic messenger explains it to him. He sees a series of four beasts, one like a lion, then like a bear, then one like a winged leopard, each of these symbolizing an arrogant kingdom. And last of all is a super beast, identified as a really evil empire, and it has lots of horns, a common symbol for kings in the Old Testament. And there's one specific horn who is an image of an arrogant king who exalts himself above God and persecutes God's people. Now, they are symbolized by a figure called the Son of Man, who's an image for both God's covenant people, but also for their king from the line of David. But then all of a sudden, God, who's called the Ancient of Days, comes and he sets up his throne. He destroys the super beast and he exalts the Son of Man on the clouds, where he comes up to sit at God's right hand and share in God's rule over the nations. We can look back now and see how all of these stories in the first half fit together. The three stories of faithfulness despite persecution, these are meant to offer hope to God's suffering people among the nations. But they suffer because human kingdoms have rebelled against God and have become beasts. And so these visions encourage patience, that God's people are to wait for him to bring his kingdom and rule over our world and vindicate his suffering people. But it raises the question about when God is going to do that, and that's what these final three visions set out to explore. In chapter 8, Daniel has another vision about the final two beasts of chapter 7, but this time they're symbolized by a ram, who we're told is an image of the empire of the Medes and Persians, and then by a goat, who's an image of ancient Greece. And out of the goat come a whole bunch of horns, one of which symbolizes the evil king from chapter 7. And we're told more about him, that he will attack Jerusalem and exalt himself above God and defile the temple with idols. However, in the end, he will be destroyed by God, who will exalt his people and his kingdom. Now, by chapter 9, Daniel is very puzzled, especially as to when all of this is going to take place. And so he consults the scroll of the prophet Jeremiah, where God said that Israel's exile would only last 70 years. So for Daniel, the 70 years is almost up. And so he asks God to fulfill his promise soon. But an angel comes and informs him that Israel's sin and rebellion has continued. And so their time of exile and oppression will continue on seven times longer than Jeremiah envisioned. Daniel is deeply disturbed by this, and he has one final vision. We're shown the same sequence of kingdoms. It's Persia, then Greece, and Alexander the Great, followed by lesser kings, all leading up to this final king of the north, who will invade Jerusalem, set up idols in the temple, and exalt himself above God. But then, all of a sudden, this king comes to ruin. Now, there's been endless debate about what all of these visions refer to. Many see a clear connection to the exploits of the Syrian king Antiochus in the 160s BC. He killed many faithful Jews in Jerusalem and set up idols in the temple. Others think it points forward to the Roman Empire's role in the execution of Jesus and the destruction of Jerusalem and the temple in AD 70. And still others think it will be fulfilled in future events that have yet to happen when Jesus will return. Now, the problem is that the symbols and the numbers, they don't quite match any of these views perfectly. But it opens up the possibility that, in a sense, they are all right. The book of Daniel has been designed to offer hope to all future generations of God's people. It did so in the days of Antiochus's empire, and it has ever since. This is why Jesus could use imagery from Daniel to describe and confront the oppressive leaders he confronted in Jerusalem. This is why John, the visionary who wrote the Revelation, could adapt Daniel's visions and apply them to Rome of his day and also all future oppressive empires. And so the point of Daniel is that all generations of readers can find here a pattern and a promise. It's a pattern that human beings and their kingdoms become violent beasts when they glorify their own power, when they redefine right and wrong, and don't acknowledge God as their true king. But Daniel also holds out a promise that one day God will confront the beast. He will rescue his world and his people by bringing his kingdom over all nations. And so for every generation, this book speaks a message of hope that should motivate faithfulness. And that's what the book of Daniel is all about.
Now, that was a little bit quick, but wasn't it actually really good? I know it was eight minutes of your life which you'll never get back. But genuinely, what an overview. And I love the symmetry in the linking chapters. I thought, wow, I'd never quite seen it quite like that. The bit that I just want to talk about before Jonathan comes and leads us in a bit more worship is we're going to have a quick look at the start of who Daniel was. And we're going to look in Daniel 1, as it says on the screen. So let's just read a little bit. In the third year of the reign of the king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. Then the king ordered the chief of his court officials to bring into the king's service some of the Israelites from the royal family and the nobility, four young men without any physical defect, bit like me, handsome, bit like me, no, showing aptitude for every kind of learning, no, well-informed, no, quick to understand, and qualified to serve in the king's palace. He was to teach them the language and literature of the Babylonians. The king assigned them a daily amount of food and wine from the king's table. They were to be trained for 3 years, and after that they were to enter the king's service. Amongst those who were chosen were some from Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. And you know that they had new names, which is Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. But Daniel, here we go, back to this thing about choice. But Daniel resolved not to defile himself with the royal food and wine, and he asked the chief official for permission not to defile himself this way. Now God caused the official to show favor and compassion to Daniel, but the official told Daniel, "I'm afraid of my lord the king who has assigned your food and drink. Why should he see you looking worse than the other young men your age? The king would have my head because of you." Daniel then said to the guard whom the chief official had appointed over them, "Please test your servant for 10 days. Give us nothing but vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then compare our appearance with that of the young men who eat the royal food, and treat your servants in accordance with what you see." So he agreed to this and tested them for 10 days. At the end of the 10 days, they looked healthier and better nourished than any of the young men who ate the royal food. So the guard took away their choice food and the wine they were to drink and gave them vegetables instead. To these four young men, God gave knowledge and understanding of all kinds of literature and learning, and Daniel could understand visions and dreams of all kinds. The king talked with them, and he found none equal to the four men. So they entered the king's service. In every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king questioned them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters in his whole kingdom. And so Daniel remained in that position for many years. Wow. There's so many talks. There's so many weeks we could unpack this about the excellence that Daniel and his three friends brought. The consistency, the diligence. Someone that's considered to be 10 times better than anybody else. They didn't rock up not doing their homework and thinking, I'll wing it as we serve the king. They must have known exactly how to serve. They must have had wisdom to know when to open their mouth and when not to open their mouth. And so as we enter kind of a reflective time of our service, I want us to think, if we were given something like food and wine, but we knew it was wrong. If we were given a promotion, but we knew it was wrong. If we were offered an opportunity, but we knew fundamentally it was wrong. Would we take it out of convenience? And I'm not here to judge, I'm just throwing it out there. Would we take it? Especially if maybe cost of living increase, you know, if we were offered a promotion, but it had to, you know, question our ethics a bit. Would we take it? Or would we do a Daniel? Which is to say, with the greatest of respect, and you do it, and notice how he was polite, by the way, to that governor, to that manager, that supervisor. He wasn't, how dare you, I'm going to bash you with a Bible verse. No, he was like, okay, I understand, thank you for your compassion, but actually let me do something to prove that this is the right decision, even though I appreciate you have concerns about my faith. So there's a challenge for us right there, before we even get to the lions. Actually, Daniel challenges us, would we stand our ground on principles of faith, of morality, of right and wrong? Because I believe fundamentally we're encouraged to do that in the book of Daniel. We're going to get on to Daniel chapter 6, and we're just going to look very briefly at the famous bit, I guess you might say, Daniel and the lions. So let's just remind ourselves that Daniel and his mates now are in privileged positions. They have worked their way up. Their reputation has been consistent, not just for 2 weeks, when you want something, not just, ooh, I was about to say Rishi Sunak. Oh, but you know what I'm trying to say. Let's give taxes out. Let's give back so we might persuade the people to vote for me whenever it is later this year. No, we're talking about year after year after year of diligence, excellence, doing things above and beyond. And so Daniel chapter 6 starts like this. It pleased Darius to appoint 120 governors to rule throughout the kingdom. You're right, Thomas? There we go. To rule throughout the kingdom, with three administrators over them, one of whom was Daniel. Now Daniel so distinguished himself amongst the administrators and the governors by his exceptional qualities that the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. At this, however, the other officials tried to find grounds for charges against Daniel in his conduct of government affairs, but they were unable to do so. They could find no corruption in him because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. What a great reputation to have. You do your job, can't find anything wrong with your job. There's no corruption in you. You are faithful, you do the right thing, and you're competent. Fantastic. Finally, these men said, "We will never find any basis for charges against this man, Daniel, unless it has something to do with the law of his God." So these administrators and governors went as a group to the king and said, "May King Darius live forever." That's called flattery, right? Buttering up the king. "May King Darius live forever. The royal administrators, prefects, and the governors have all agreed that the king should issue a decree that anyone who prays to any god or human being during the next 30 days, except to you, your majesty, shall be thrown into the lion's den. Now, your majesty," can you hear the tone that I'm putting into that? Suck ups. "Now, your majesty, issue the decree, put it in writing so that it cannot be altered, in accordance with old law which cannot be repealed." So King Darius put the decree in writing. Then they said to the king, "Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah," notice how all of this flattery has suddenly gone a bit, "Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah, pays no attention to you, your majesty, or to the decree you put in writing. He still prays 3 times a day. When the king heard this, he was greatly distressed. He was determined to rescue Daniel and made every effort until sundown to save him." You see, the king was tricked. Yeah, you get that. The king hadn't realized that Daniel, his number one kind of favorite, I guess you might say, his top official, top guy who he was about to hand everything to, of course, that's going to put him in a no-win situation. But then the men went as a group to King Darius and said, Remember, Your Majesty, that according to the old law, no decree or edict that the king issues can be changed. So the king had to give the order, and they brought Daniel and threw him into the lion's den. We lost the mouse. into the lion's den. The king said to Daniel, "May your God, whom you serve continually, rescue you." A stone was brought and placed over the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring, with the rings of his nobles, so that Daniel's situation could not be changed. Then the king returned to his palace and spent the whole night without eating and without any entertainment being brought to him, and he could not sleep. At the first light of dawn, the king got up and hurried down to the lion's den. When he came near the den, he called to Daniel in an anguished voice, "Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to rescue you from the lions?" You get the sense that the king desperately wants God to have done the miracle that we know God did. The king is so on board with Daniel's God. And Daniel answered, "May the king live forever. My God sent his angel, and he shut the mouths of the lions. They have not hurt me, because I was found innocent in his sight, nor have I ever done any wrong before you, your majesty." The king was overjoyed and gave orders to lift Daniel out of the den. And when Daniel was lifted from the den, no wound was found on him, because he had trusted in his God. What a great sentence. If you can remember one thing today, no wound was found on Daniel because he trusted in his God. He must have had incredible faith. I've never been faced with a lion. I've been to a safari park. They are quite intimidating, even from a distance. Even behind the glass of my car. I remember with the kids once, glass of the car, little electric fence, and lion. I'm thinking, pants, not happy. Not happy at all. But that, you know, you fake it, don't you, parents, for the kids? Ah, little lion. Nice. Anyway, so you're thinking, oh my gosh. However, Daniel trusted in his God. I digress. Now, where did I get to? Hang on. At the king's command, the men who had falsely accused Daniel were brought in and thrown into the lion's den with their families. And before they even reached the floor of the den, the lions overpowered them and crushed all their bones. The Disney story gets a bit dark at that point. So, this is interesting though, isn't it? Because people who look at this Bible account and go, nah, it was embellished, it was exaggerated, the writers wanted you to believe it, but actually, you know, Daniel was rescued. No, the stone was put in front of the door with the king's seal. Daniel was not rescued. Oh, hang on, maybe the lions weren't hungry. No, because when they were thrown the baddies, the lions ripped them to shreds. So you can't have it both ways, ladies and gents. We're either going to believe this is God doing a miracle and stop the lions opening their mouth, and probably just kept them away, because, not being funny, lions can kill you with their paws, right? So this is not just about The lions were kept away from Daniel. And they clearly were hungry, because they did what lions do when the baddies were put in. Then King Darius wrote, I love this the conclusion. Then King Darius wrote to all the nations and peoples of every language around the entire earth. Don't forget, that's everywhere that they knew about at the time. May you prosper greatly. I issue a decree that in every part of my kingdom, people must fear revere the God of Daniel, for he is the living God, and he endures forever. His kingdom will not be destroyed, his dominion will never end. He rescues and he saves. He performs signs and wonders in the heavens and on the earth. He has rescued Daniel from the power of the lions. What an incredible thing for a king to declare, not just in his court, not just to those people around him who might have, you know, forgotten that he said it, but to every living person he had influence over and could communicate with. This is the influence that Daniel had because he trusted in his God and God was faithful. What an incredible wrap-up story. And so not only can we take encouragement today that Daniel stood his ground, like I said, that Daniel was not afraid to defend his faith, stand up for his faith, and live it out publicly. Not only was he not afraid, but God came through, and God was glorified as a result. Now, our series, for those that aren't here all the time, our series is looking at how Jesus in the New Testament is mirrored in the Old. Where do we find the Jesus characters in the Old Testament? And this is what I wanted to just show you very briefly. Look at this. Daniel, without blemish, was in the sentence. Jesus, New Testament, without blemish. Both exemplary lives, both plotted against, both had false accusations. Both were sealed in with a stone. Both had angels attend them. Both God delivered him, as in Father God. And then God is glorified as a result of both of their lives. There are incredible parallels here. Incredible parallels. But what I want to finish really with is this kind of verse of the day from Hebrews. And I want this to kind of be the wrap-up for our thoughts on Daniel today. This is from Hebrews, obviously New Testament. Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. So he is always the same. So do not be attracted by strange new ideas. Your strength comes from God's grace, not from rules about food, which don't help those who follow them. We have an altar from which the priests in the tabernacle have no right to eat. Under the old system, the high priest brought the blood of animals into the holy place as a sacrifice for sin, and the bodies of the animals were burned outside the camp. So also Jesus suffered and died outside the city gates to make his people holy by means of his own blood. So let us go out to him, outside the camp, and bear the disgrace that he bore. For this world is not our permanent home. We are looking forward to a home yet to come. Therefore, let us offer through Jesus a continual sacrifice of praise to God, proclaiming our allegiance to his name. And don't forget to do good and to share with those in need, because these are the sacrifices that please God. It's amazing that we talk about the rituals of Christianity. Even here and now, we're meeting at the same time on a Sunday morning. Nothing wrong with that, by the way, but if we had church on Saturday night, that's no different either. We're not into the ritual. We're into gathering so we can worship and we can learn, we can reflect, we can encourage each other. Doesn't matter how and when and where. But actually, what matters is that we go out to Jesus, that we are not afraid to declare our allegiance to his name as a sacrifice. And I love that last bit. And don't forget to do good and share with those in need, because that's what God wants to see as well. So our actions and our language have to be aligned with our faith. And in many ways, that's what speaks to our colleagues and our neighbors and our friends and our family. It's when we say one thing and do something else that the world has every right to call us hypocrites. Every right. Now, none of us are perfect, so in many ways, we're all hypocrites at times. But actually, when faced with a fork in the road this week, maybe, could be in the next 24 hours, I don't know, are we brave enough, like Daniel, to say, hang on, I recognize that this is one of those moments. It's a fork in the road moment. Am I going to avoid the discussion, or am I going to answer this question about God? That's the question. Let me finish with the story. On Friday, so this is 2 days ago, the last lesson of the day is my cute little year sevens. Actually, some of them are not cute, and some of them are not little, but they are year sevens. And right at the end of the lesson, one lad stayed behind, and he said to me, "Sir, are you at gate crash tonight? Because I want to play pool with you." And I went, "Oh, Leo, I'm so sorry, it's not my turn." And so he went, "Oh, I wanted to play pool with you." And I was like, "No, you have to play with Ruth." But Leo was, he was a little face, he is a little cutie. And he was like, "Oh, okay then." And off he went. But my TAs were in the room, and they went, "What is gate crash? What on earth was Leo talking about?" And I thought, okay, what do I answer here? Do I say it's a youth group in the community that I help with? Technically true. Do I say it's to do with the church that I go to? Obviously technically true. Do I say actually it's a youth club where we really want to engage with young people and show them a positive way of living? And again, technically true. And it was one of these forks in the road that I could have been a little bit mealy-mouthed. I could have gone, youth club. But I actually felt, unusually, I just said, no, actually, this is run by the local church, which I'm part of. And every Friday, we offer an environment for young people from, you know, primary school up to this certain age group to come and just chill and relax on a Friday night. And that's what I said, you know, kind of words to that effect. And the TAs just stopped. and went, "You go to church." Now, I'm not sure whether I should take that as a criticism. You, Michael, you go to church. And so I went, "Yes." And actually, Leo was at the door at this point, and he stuck his head around, I don't. I thought, oh, bless his little cottons. And I went, "That's okay, Leo, don't you worry about it," you know. And so it was quite sweet, really. But the TAs were really quite shocked that the word church and youth club type stuff were in the same sentence, and probably that Mr. Jones was in that sentence at the same time. Now, because I get on with my colleagues very well, I wasn't at risk of losing my job. I wasn't. You know, I'm not going to pretend that this is like Daniel. You know, you're going to get thrown to the lions if you say the word church or if I deny that. But I think, if I'm honest, we all have moments like that. Are we going to apologize for having a link with the church or believing in God, whatever the question might be? And in home groups this week, just to give you a heads up, you're going to study, or we are going to study, a particular historic event which happened 25 years ago. Where are we? We're in May, last week. 25 years ago from last week, end of April, an event happened in America where teenagers picked up weapons and went into a school. And you'll know it, and we'll, like I say, we'll talk about it midweek. It was horrific, and many young people in that school lost their lives. But we'll analyze that, because there was one particular person who refused to deny God. And so she was shot in the head, and she died right there, because she said, "I will not say that God doesn't exist." And so the actual shooter said, "Fine." And that's a serious discussion to have, more than we're going to have this morning. But this week, we've got to analyze that sometimes we might have consequences for us standing up for what we believe in. By the way, we're very fortunate in our country. Let's be real about this. If we were in a different country and we were having this discussion, your life is at risk if you say something. If you say, "I believe this and I believe that," or "this is right and this is wrong." Here, we might get taken the mickey out of. And if that really is the extent of our faith, that we're too worried to be a bit unpopular for 5 minutes, it's a little bit interesting. Let's think about that this week, shall we? And if forks in the road come, let's be brave, a bit Daniel-ish. Let's do a Daniel and not apologize at the very least. Amen? We're going to finish with a song that Jonathan kind of read a little bit from, which is that God is waymaker. He is miracle worker. He makes ways when we don't see them. He turns situations around when we can't see a solution. And that's what I want to finish with today as we go into our week.